Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Susan Shand and John Russell. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly and I will present The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Susan Shand.
Boris Johnson on Wednesday is set to take over Britain's governing Conservative Party and become the country's next Prime Minister. Johnson is a strong supporter of Britain's exit from the European Union. He replaces Theresa May. She announced her resignation 2 months ago following several failed efforts to reach a deal to lead her country out of the EU, a process also known as Brexit. Johnson is one of Britain's most famous and controversial politicians. He was a newspaper reporter and later the mayor of London. He also served as Britain's foreign secretary. Johnson defeated Jeremy Hunt in the Conservative leadership contest. He won 2/3 of the votes among about 160,000 party members across Britain. In a short speech to hundreds of party members and lawmakers, Johnson promised to deliver Brexit, unite the country, and defeat Jeremy Corbyn. Corbyn is the leader of the opposition Labour Party. U.S. President Donald Trump tweeted his congratulations and said he will be great. Trump has praised Johnson in the past. Trump has been critical of May's inability to reach a Brexit deal. He has said Johnson will do a better job. May stepped down after Parliament repeatedly rejected the Brexit agreement she struck with the 28-nation European Union. Conservatives supported Johnson after he promised to succeed where May had failed. He told voters he would lead Britain out of the EU by October 31st, even if there is not a deal. I think we know that we can do it, and that the people of this country are trusting in us to do it, and we know that we will do it, said Johnson. Johnson said he can get the EU to renegotiate the deal it made with May, something the EU says it will not do. Economists and financial leaders fear that a no-deal Brexit could take Britain into recession. They also fear big problems with international trade. These fears have pushed down the value of British money, the pound. Caroline Fairbairn is the director of the Confederation of British Industry. She said there must be a Brexit deal. On Brexit, the new Prime Minister must not underestimate the benefits of a good deal, she said. In 2016, Johnson played an important part in the EU referendum campaign. He popularized the false claim that Britain sends the EU $440 million a week. He argued that money should instead be used for the British Health Service. Britain sends about half the amount of money, Johnson claimed. After May became Prime Minister, she made Johnson the Foreign Secretary. He made several mistakes during his 2 years in the position, such as suggesting Libyan officials should clear the dead bodies out of the destroyed city of Sirte to make it a shopping center. He quit the government in 2018. Many Conservative Party members believe Johnson can deliver on Brexit. Critics say he is a Trump-like leader and someone who uses racist language to get support. British lawmakers begin their six-week summer break on Friday. They return to work in September. Johnson will then begin the fight for his plans. Johnson will be the leader of a House of Commons whose members are mostly against leaving the EU without a deal. They and others plan to resist any push for a no-deal Brexit. I'm Susan Shand.
In one California city, there will soon be no more manholes. The holes workers use to go under streets to repair equipment and fix other problems. Instead, the manholes will now be called maintenance holes. And nothing will be described as man-made. The adjective soon will change to human-made. Leaders in the city of Berkeley voted this month to change about 40 gender-based words used in the city code. New gender-neutral terms will appear instead. This means words like manpower will become human effort or workforce. And pronouns like she, her, he, and him will be replaced by they and them. The effort, meant to create a more inclusive community, has received both praise and criticism. Berkeley is within what is called the San Francisco Bay Area. It has a long history of progressive politics. It was among the first American cities to start a recycling pickup program in the 1970s. More recently, it became the first city in the United States to tax sugary drinks and ban natural gas in new homes. Rigel Robinson co-wrote the gender-neutral words measure. At 23, he is the youngest member of Berkeley's city council. He said Berkeley's existing city code makes it sound like men are the only ones that exist in entire industries, or that men are the only ones on city government. Robinson added, "As society and our cultures become more aware about issues of gender identity and gender expression, it's important that our laws reflect that." The changes will cost taxpayers $600, Robinson said. They are set to take effect later this year. Removing gendered terms has been slowly happening for many years in the United States, at some colleges, companies, and other places. But the broad, citywide change in Berkeley is remarkable and sends a message. Linguistics professor Kristen Searitt told the Associated Press. She is with Rutgers University in New Jersey. "Anytime you're talking about something where gender is not the issue, but you use a gendered term, That immediately sends a message of exclusion, even if it's a dialogue that has nothing to do with gender, said Sirit. She recently led an effort to update the rules on inclusive language for the Linguistic Society of America. For 27-year-old Berkeley local Hel Baker, the approved measure is a small step in the right direction. I don't by any means think this is the great championing for gender equality, but you gotta start somewhere, Baker said. Lauren Singh, who is 18, grew up in Berkeley. She approved of the move, saying, "Everyone deserves to be represented and feel included in the community." Not everyone agreed with the move, however. Laramie Crocker, a builder in Berkeley, said the changes made him laugh. If you try to change the laws every time someone has a new opinion about something, it doesn't make sense. It's just a bad habit to get into, Crocker said. Crocker, who is 54, said he would like city officials to center their efforts on bigger issues, like homelessness. Let's keep it simple. Get back to work, he said. Let's figure out how to get homeless people housed and fed. He, she, they, it. They're wasting my time.
Cyber attackers are increasingly targeting school systems around the United States. The effects of such attacks worsen as more American schools use technology for teaching. A recent example comes from Connecticut. Cyber attacks cut internet connection to the Avon public school system several times a day over a 6-week period. The attackers did not capture sensitive information from the school system, but the damage was still costly. Classroom teaching plans that required the internet were halted. Robert Wojtek is the school system's technology director. He sought help from the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or FBI. The first time I called the FBI, their first question was, "Well, what did it cost you?" he said. Wojtek explained that teaching and learning stopped for some 4,000 students. He asked, "How do you put a price tag on that?" The FBI says schools are targeted because they hold sensitive data and provide important public services. It said in a written statement that the attackers are criminals seeking profit, young people playing jokes, and possibly even foreign governments. Attacks against schools have become common, the FBI said. But it is impossible to know how often they happen because many are never reported. Schools with few or no information security employees are often surprised to find themselves as targets. Coventry Local School System in Ohio has about 2,000 students. In May, it had to close schools as it worked, with FBI support, to fight a virus that had infected its computer system. The school system did not have cybersecurity insurance, said its technology director, Kelly Kendrick. Her three-person department is still working to repair devices affected by the attack. FBI officials told the school system that the attackers apparently did not get sensitive information. But Kendrick said it was clear they were after data of some kind. Why this little school in Akron, Ohio? Why was it a target? Kendrick said. It has really opened my eyes to how data of any kind is marketable, sellable. In September, the FBI issued a public service announcement. The announcement warned against the widespread collection of student identification data and other information, including educational progress reports and classroom activities. Such data could affect privacy and safety if compromised, the FBI said. Stolen data could lead to tracking, identity theft, and other threats, it said. Punishment for cyber attacks can be severe. In March, Olukayode Lawal, a Nigerian man living in Smyrna, Georgia, was sentenced to 10 months in prison. He was also ordered to leave the country. Lawal was found guilty of involvement in a plan to steal money using tax information of Connecticut school employees. In North Dakota, a third of schools were hit with a malware attack last year. The attack was traced to North Korea, although it is unclear if it began there. Sean Weiss is North Dakota's chief information security officer. He said school cyber systems may be considered easy targets because they're a little bit more open than traditional business culture. I do feel that is changing, just not quickly enough, Weiss added. I'm John Russell.
And now we present The Making of a Nation. Today, Kelly Jean Kelly and I continue the story of the presidency of Barack Obama. Conflicts related to race happened throughout Obama's time in office. Early in his first term, police arrested a Harvard University professor in his own home because they believed he was breaking into the house. The professor was an African-American man. Obama commented publicly on the arrest, saying the police had acted stupidly. He added, "There's a long history in this country of African-Americans and Latinos being stopped by law enforcement more than was fair." Obama's words made some police officers and other Americans angry. The public reaction showed that while the country had elected an African-American president, race was still a sensitive issue.
2 years later, racial tensions exploded over the shooting of a 17-year-old African-American named Trayvon Martin. He was walking in a Florida neighborhood when a leader of the local neighborhood watch group shot him, claiming self-defense. The shooter was tried and found not guilty of a crime. But many Americans believed the case showed that African Americans were unfairly treated. In answer, Obama called for the country to come together. He spoke about Martin's parents, noting that he was raising two children.
You know, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. And, I think they are right to expect that all of us, as Americans, are going to take this with the seriousness it deserves and that we're going to get to the bottom of exactly what happened.
Yet, the nation was facing racial conflict again soon. In 2014, a police officer killed another unarmed African-American teenager. Michael Brown was suspected of robbing a store in Ferguson, Missouri. The shooting led to weeks of protests in Ferguson, some of them violent. Later, a jury ruled that the officer had not committed a crime. But the federal government found that the city's police and court system had a history of race-related abuses. Feelings about Ferguson were still high when, in June 2015, a white man shot and killed 9 African Americans at a prayer meeting in Charleston, South Carolina. The shooter was clear that he targeted the victims because of their race. In the days that followed, Obama traveled to Charleston and met with the families of the victims. Historian Michael Nelson remembered him speaking at the funeral of the clergyman killed in the attack.
In addition to the words he spoke, I started singing.
Amazing grace.
The old hymn, which, by the way, is a hymn in black churches and white churches, Amazing Grace. That's something that presidents don't usually do, but it really did sort of connect with the moment. It's an affirmation of, you know, as bad as things are, they will get better, or they can get better if we recommit ourselves.
Yet, as historian Michael Nelson notes, it is one thing to meet people's emotional needs and another to make political changes. Obama did not succeed in persuading Congress to pass national gun control reforms. His most serious effort came after a mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut in 2012. 20 young children and 6 adults died in the attack. The shooter was a 21-year-old man with mental health problems, an interest in violence, and the legal right to use a gun. He had no apparent reason to target the school or the children. Obama spoke out emotionally after the shooting.
Every time I think about those kids, it gets me mad.
But a majority of lawmakers and many Americans did not think the federal government should, or even could, limit the right to own guns.
Early in his presidency, Obama and his administration expanded health care for Americans. Working with administration officials, Congress developed and later approved a bill to help people who could not pay for health insurance. It set up a system so that the federal government would pay for some of the cost. It also required insurance companies to help people who were already sick. Under the measure, insurance plans for parents would pay health care costs for their children until they reached age 26. President Obama signed the bill into law, but his administration's efforts were not popular with everyone. Critics objected that the law sharply increased government involvement in American society. Historian Michael Nelson says some people disliked the measure so much that they called the law Obamacare in order to blame the president for it.
Obama later said, I'm fine with that because that extended the protection of health insurance to many Americans who otherwise didn't have it or were in jeopardy of losing it. I think, you know, Obamacare has become now kind of part of the fabric of American national life. And the fact that his name is attached to it means that people will always associate that with him.
Obama was able to pass health care reforms because his party, the Democrats, won control of both the House of Representatives and the Senate in the 2008 elections. 2 years later, as a sign that his policies were not popular with many Americans, the Democrats lost control of the House. Obama noted the defeats. He said after the 2010 elections that the Democrats took a shellacking. 4 years later, the party also lost control of the Senate. As president, Obama took steps he believed were needed to make all Americans equal under the law. In 2012, he expressed support for same-sex marriage. 2 years later, Obama signed an executive order to protect the rights of LGBT employees in the workplace. LGBT is short for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transsexual. Many Americans opposed the president's policies on social questions. On international issues, Obama and his government faced challenges in Libya, Syria, and with Russia. And he was both supported and criticized for supporting the Paris Climate Agreement, a deal designed to slow rising temperatures. Obama was also criticized for agreeing to a nuclear deal with Iran. For years, Iran claimed its nuclear program was only for peaceful purposes. Yet the United States and other countries were not so sure. Under the 2015 agreement, the Iranian government promised to limit its nuclear activities and permit visits by international inspectors. In exchange, world powers agreed to ease economic actions against Iran.
Without the support of lawmakers, in his last months in office, Obama used executive orders to carry out policies. The actions have the force of law at the time, but they can be easily overturned by future presidents. Some Americans took aim at Obama personally. They questioned whether he was even born in the United States. A businessman led a call for Obama to release documents proving where he had been born. That man was Donald Trump. As Obama's time in office was coming to an end, Trump announced he would run for president himself. And in November 2016, he took the White House.
That brings our history series to a close for now. Thank you for joining us for The Making of a Nation, American History, from VOA Learning English. And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.